Today on Wings. 2021 is the birth centenary of the world-famous archaeologist Maria Gimbutas. Joan Marler was her personal editor in the last 7 years of her life.
So as you see from this title, Old Europe Through a Matriarchal Lens, we're focusing on what Maria Gimbutas called Old Europe, and this is her terminology for the very earliest horticultural people who made the transition to a food-producing economy in Europe. And Maria defined Old Europe as the pre-patriarchal, pre-Indo-European societies.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Now I have the great joy to introduce to you Joan Marler. Joan Marler teaches archaeomythology in California Institute of Integral Studies in San Francisco, where she is on the faculty of the Women's Spirituality, Philosophy and Religion program. Joan is the editor of The Civilization of the Goddess by Maria Gimbutas. She is the founder and executive director of the Institute of Archaeomythology and lectures internationally on Maria Gimbutas' life and work. Welcome, Joan.
So I want first to welcome Maria here and to thank her for her pioneering work and to and she, of course, is gazing at us from the realm of the ancestors. And she reminds us that we are all ancestors in training. And really, it's important, I think, every day for us to realize that what a precious privilege it is to be alive while we are alive, and to use this time to center ourselves in what, from our soul, we consider the most important. So that when we too pass into the realm of the ancestors, we can go there with the acknowledgement that we've given something to our culture. And this is what she was told as a child is the most important thing, to align herself with her deepest intellectual and spiritual quest to be able to give something to her culture. And her culture was Lithuania. She was born and raised in Lithuania. She was born and raised in a time between the world wars in which the fabric of the ancient culture, even though it was shredded, was still intact, at least partially intact, so that she witnessed the peasants still kissing the earth in the morning and the evening. And she absorbed the folk culture in which all of nature was vividly alive, with a sacred that took folkloric forms that were not simply to be found in books, but were alive in people's imagination to align them with a sense of connection, interconnection with the natural world. That which in this day and age is often considered somewhat utopian or somewhat wishful thinking, that people could actually align themselves with something that is sustainable, was her initial experience. And I think that that really gave her a grounding to be able to understand the material that later on she was working with when she began her excavations in Southeast Europe. When she came to the United States and worked for 13 years at Harvard University and produced her first series of books, she was known internationally as a world-class scholar on the Indo-European Bronze Age. So she was very familiar with weapons and chieftains. But when she began her work in Southeast Europe from an earlier cultural stratum, she had the opportunity as project director of 5 major excavations to really dig up with her own hands and to direct the excavations from questions informed by her earliest experience, which is that the earliest peoples who were the earliest food producers must have had a relationship with nature that was viable, otherwise they could not have survived. so that the great profusion of art, the great profusion of sculpture and ceramics, the material culture that survives in the archaeological record, spoke of an interconnection with nature that she was able to recognize. She also noticed that the well-constructed societies, the well-constructed habitation sites throughout Southeast Europe and into Central Europe and beyond, had no indication of hierarchical structure. These seemed to be egalitarian societies, not the chieftain societies evidenced in the Bronze Age. Something else was happening. She found in Central Europe lots of evidence of what she identified as matrilineal longhouses. These societies and those in the Balkan Peninsula and all through the Balkans and Southeast Europe and into Central Europe were very long-lived societies. The Sesklo culture in Thessaly, the Demeni, which followed, the Vinča culture, which has its epicenter in present-day Serbia, the Karanovo culture and all of its manifestations in Bulgaria, the Tica in Hungary, and so on. Many of them lasted at least a millennium before there was a transition to another identifiable culture system. So just think about this. It takes a long time for the fabric of society to be developed. It takes a very relatively short time for societies to be destroyed. But in that very, very long cultivation of cultural history, learning how for the first time to grow food, there had to be a very sensitive reciprocity with the cycles of nature. And this is exactly what is expressed in the material record. And the inflection is female. There was a veneration of the female. In Western Europe, there's a problem with that. In fact, Maria used the word goddess, and it caused a kind of a firestorm of controversy. Particularly in the Western Protestant context, it has very little currency, if any. And so the word goddess has come to be a field of kind of contending ideologies, which has eclipsed that original meaning that she intended. What she meant by goddess, she defined again and again and again. She said, the goddess is all life in nature. The goddess is that oneness, that reciprocity with the human community and the natural world, recognition that life is sacred, and that the human community is dependent upon the respect and the ritual life that sustains not only the idea of the sacred, which leads to balance, but also the sense that if we are not in relationship with that sacred, there is no continuity of life. Because in that whole cycle of life, which is reflected in the material culture, and I'll be showing you some of this later on, there is the recognition that not only do we come forth into this life, we are born from this earth through the body of woman, but our death is inevitable, so what to do with that, and that too is within the realm of the sacred. So now, in talking about old Europe, Maria didn't just put a dotted line around Europe or around Southeast Europe, but she recognized that there was a cultural continuity from Anatolia and beyond. So now it's important to look at the very, very important site of Çatalhöyük, which is in Turkey, which is in the Konya Plain, which is still now being excavated. And here is found this really amazing sculpture, which if you go to the Great Museum in Anatolia, you can see. This was found in a grain bin. And here is a reconstruction of her, shown flanked by the sacred felines, the leopards, with their tails wrapped around her shoulders and her hands on their head, sitting there, sitting at the center of the world with her great buttocks. So many of the figurines have these great buttocks. Sometimes interpreted as being the birth giver, or interpreted as the great clan mother, or the progenitor of the life of the society. And this figure, flanked by the felines, is kind of the prototype for a long, long, long lineage of the great mistress of animals, or the Cybele, and others, later Artemis, that has its prototype in this figure. So this connection with that one who gives birth to society, the human community, is also associated in the material culture with that one who also gives birth to the plant life. And there are many, many, many images that come forth from the Mesolithic, from the transition from hunting and gathering to collecting, and then before even people settled down to be food producers, this sense of connection with the womb place of the woman's body, with that great richness of vegetable life. This is from the Vinča culture, centered in present-day Serbia and also parts of Bulgaria and Romania, from the end of the 6th millennium BC. And you see where the womb is where the plant life is coming. From Maria's own excavations, she found in her Sesklo culture excavation at Achillion such images as this, the pregnant women with their hands on their bellies with the great exaggerated triangle, focusing the attention on this place as the sacred source of life, as well as such figures as the smaller one on your right, where the hands are on the belly, and the belly could certainly be seen also as the bread dough that is being kneaded on the altar of the lap. And she found that such images as this were found in association with those places where bread was stored, the grain was stored, grain was ground and prepared and baked into bread. So that association is clear. So to continue with the idea that from this one who is the birth giver, who is the great primordial mother, who gives birth to this society, she's also the one who gives birth to that which nourishes the society. Here from the earliest cuneiform tablets dug up in what is now Iraq, we have such verses as this, Inanna, the great goddess of heaven and earth, saying, I poured out plants before him, speaking of her consort Dumuzi. I placed grain before him. I poured out grain before him. I poured out grain from my womb. The womb as the storehouse, and the womb as the body of the goddess herself. She's not just mother, but she is representative of the entire cycle of becoming. So here on your left from the Demeni culture, which followed the Sesklo culture, is the picture that epitomizes that maternal embrace that is the first transmission of culture between mother and child. And here she is sitting, as though sitting at the center of the world. She has the great spirals around her body, the spirals of this cyclic energy that is swirling around her womb, and the child is swirling with that vitality as well. And it's in this maternal embrace that's the first transmission of culture, of meaning, of ethics, of language, of stories, and of all that makes up the rich fabric of human community being transmitted. And of course, this flies in the face of the patriarchal idea that women are just expressive of passive biology, where men are the great creators of culture. And of course, we all dismiss that and realize that it is in this embrace that is the first transmission, and that all peoples are involved in the creation of culture. Men are not to be excluded, but this embrace is also not to be minimized. And that woman who is sitting, who is enthroned as though at the center of the world, continues down through myriad images, because every woman is the sacred woman holding the sacred child. And in old Europe, there is a sense of acknowledgement and reciprocity with the plant people, the animal people. And this is exemplified by such images as this from the Vinča culture, the bear mother with her little bear baby. These are the bear people, so that the animals are not below, that there is a sense of the exchange of consciousness between the animal world and the human world. Here, from the Sesklo culture, from this early 6th millennium BC, is the expression of the woman who is the bird. And this is the metaphor, visual metaphor, for woman as bird. And Maria called her bird goddess, because in her view, goddess is expressive of that sacred realm, of the woman and bird as one within the sacred realm. This is the bird woman with the great nurturing breasts, wearing the mask of the bird, who is at home within the domestic realm. You can tell by her very nice hairdo. But she's also the one who flies beyond the horizon, who dives down into the waters to bring up the mud from the bottom of the lake, who also is able to fly in all worlds, the upper world and the lower world, circulating. And she's exemplifying that exchange of consciousness that is central to old European sensibility. Here from the Vinča culture is the nursing mother, of which there are many images. This little baby has a bird beak. So if this woman had a head, she would be the bird mother. So the bird mother and the bird baby. And here, even down into the Mycenaean period, is bird mommy and bird baby sitting. Here's the mommy holding the baby rather unceremoniously in her hand like this. But still there's the sense of, this is part of my relations, all my relations, a kinship with the natural world. There are also images that show the youthfulness, the vitality of the youthful female as part of this great cycle. Many images of the body used as the canvas for the expression of symbolic imagery. Imagery that express what we can only guess, but this is part of a tradition of inscribing the body that is found all over the world, so that every woman becomes the sacred woman. So now I'd like to linger a little bit looking at imagery and what the imagery can express kinesthetically. On the left, again, Çatalhöyük, 7th millennium BC, as compared to the imagery from Malta, from the temple of Hajarim, 3rd millennium BC, 3,500 years of continuity. Now, I'm not trying to say that there was a direct connection, transmission of figurines, because you have a time gap that's very huge. But there's something that is encoded in the body that speaks of a relationship with ideas, with a worldview that is continuous over a very long period of time. What is this expression of woman who is whole within herself, in which the powers that are within the matrix of the female form are not deflected outward, but are contained, and they have a sense of repose, of quietness, and of wholeness. Some of these images come from the temple period of Malta. This is, I just wanted to give you a glimpse of one of the temples, and this is Imnidra, that is in the shape of her body, who is also aligned with the solstices and the equinoxes. So these great temples, the temple period from the 4th millennium BC to the mid 3rd millennium BC, continuing that shape of this great goddess's body, aligned with the celestial events that mark the cycles of the agricultural calendar. Now, looking at these societies, particularly let's look at Malta, this was a society, as all of the Neolithic societies were, that was sustainable over a very long period of time. As I said, on Malta, it was 2,500 years of continuous development, in which there's no evidence of warfare, no evidence of domination, male or female domination, evidence that the societies were in balance. And this can be said about all of the old European societies as well. So what is that? What does it mean for societies to be sustainable? And on Malta, that it means a lot, because they were growing food and sustaining their societies, even to be able to build these great temples, in a situation where the soil was very thin. It took a very special knowledge to be able to continue to grow food and to be able to survive. So those elements that make up sustainability are, one, that you've got to be in relationship with the natural world in a respectful way. There is no room for hostility. There's no room for what archaeologists very typically now are saying, that people learn to dominate nature. In an attitude of dominating nature, there's no room for mutual respect. There's no room for a sense of the sacred, of deep listening, of deep participation in understanding that the human community and the animals and all that makes up life are part of a matrix that must be in balance. In a sustainable society, there is no room for warfare. It's very wasteful, as we know. Warfare and domination, territoriality, extremely wasteful of resources. There's no room for that. So there has to be patterns of conflict resolution. So the inflection is female. The inflection is the concept of sacred source comes forth from the female body, but not to the exclusion of the male, because everyone was participating. So I just want to give a glimpse of the fact that the males were there, even though only 2 or 3% in the material record. So here are seated ceremonial figure from the Tsitsa culture, masked with a sickle over his shoulder as an agricultural male image that is part, must have been part of agricultural rituals. Here is a seated male from the Sesklo culture. Here is an ithophallic male also in a very, very important role, because there could be no birthing of children without this relationship between male and female. And in the temples of Malta, such things as the triple phalli, and the archaeologist is saying, well, why triple? Oh, this seems, and I say, well, why not triple? Because it's not one phallus, perhaps could be connected to one masculine ego, but three phalli become the principle of regeneration. Now, I wanted to just, in this musing over the visual expression of sustainability and the cycles of life and the human participation in that, I'd like to just show you some of the ceramics that give a direct expression of that. And this is, these are just tiny little glimpses of a tremendous outpouring of ceramic art. So on your left, you see from the Cucuten culture, a typical vase holder, and at the bottom is a spiral that spirals in and spirals out that is found, it's ubiquitous, really, all over the world. And we can say that that spiral that comes into the center and turns around and comes out is the perfect metaphor for that cycle of life, in which at the end of life is the beginning. At the end is the beginning, and that distance between the end and the beginning is that place that's analogous to the mulching of the dying, which then becomes the source of new life, which invigorates life again. And it's exactly that design which is the floor pattern of the ancient dances, the ancient spiral dances, and of course people were dancing. It's exactly that spiral that is here on the buttocks of the figurine from the Cucuten culture, which is found in Romania. It's exactly these spirals that are found from 5000 BC from the Butmir culture along the Adriatic. This sense of the interconnection of all things, which is the perfect illustration of what the quantum physicists are talking about today, which comes as a big aha. Doesn't it? You mean things are interconnected? How could that be? But here it is. And is this not an expression of consciousness? Is this not an expression of the essential distillation of the awareness of what human community is all about as part of the interconnection with all of life? And that this is what sustainability is all about. Even within chaos, chaos theory now is showing that there's pattern in chaos. Perhaps chaos is this place where things, what is rigid, opens up into its forms to be recirculated into new design, new life. The houses. I know there's been important work on Berber houses in North Africa. Well, this work needs to be also looked at in terms of old European houses and how people painted the houses inside and out with these great swirling designs, to once again to reflect back this whole environment of interconnection. And I know there's been a lot of discussion in the archaeological realm about why these spirals, and it's been somewhat of a consensus that, well, you can't make comparisons. You have to say, well, this culture system had spirals, but they have no meaning to any other place. Colin Renfrew, for instance, said, oh, people, if you sit and doodle, you doodle spirals. It's what people do. It has no other meaning. But I really want to underline this connection with what unites these societies, which is they were all horticultural. They were all connected with the cycles of the natural world. And perhaps the creation of ceramics in itself, that action over and over and over again within the human community of creating these patterns, was a reenactment of this consciousness. This is from the Cucuten culture in Romania, but it looks very much like the pottery from Navajo. There's something about the work that comes forth from horticultural people that speaks of very similar aesthetics that reflect a consciousness of the natural world. And here are other beautiful spirals from Malta, which speak of that pattern as well. Now, of course, it's not just all life-giving, but the regeneration out of the death realm keeps the whole cycle going. And this is a typical rock-cut tomb from Malta, but this type of tomb is also found around the Mediterranean. The essential expression of the tomb as womb, in which the body is in the form of a fetus sprinkled with red ochre. And this form then is repeated in myriad ways throughout Europe. Now, I would say, in terms of looking at old Europe through a matriarchal lens, Maria Gimbutas specifically said, this is not a matriarchy, because she identified matriarchy with the traditional interpretation of the dominance of women as the mirror image of patriarchy. And what she said instead is that these were egalitarian societies in which women were at the center of ritual life, at the center of an acknowledgement of the female body as a visual metaphor of the sacred source. She preferred to call them matristic societies, matrilineal, matrifocal societies. But all of the elements that make up what she said was not a matriarchy is actually perfectly aligned with everything that has been said during this Congress that matriarchy is. And I have a very strong feeling that if Maria was with us, she would say, yes, I accept this new interpretation. I want to say that we are the ones who are the source. We are the ones who have to continue the deep listening of what is truly the matriarchal culture that is then living in us and living again. So I'd like to invite you to go to the Institute of Archaeomythology website to stay in touch. And thank you very much for your listening.
Joan Mahler. Joan Mahler teaches archaeomythology in California Institute of Integral Studies in San Francisco. She is a founder and executive director of the Institute of Archaeomythology and lectures internationally on Maria Gimbutas's life and work.
Wings thanks our supporters, including your community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, co-convener of the Second World Congress on Matriarchal Studies in 2005. Our sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.